Today on Movie Rollers, we talk about A Monster Calls and Hidden Figures. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, you as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Hello.
Greetings.
Hello.
This is our third podcast in a row, so we'll do our best to keep the energy up.
The holiday show.
I'm not sure when we'll release this.
They've all been holiday shows.
Yeah, they're all coming out in late December. But, yeah, it's been quite a ride for us this past few weeks. There's been tons of movies, and hopefully it'll be a good first quarter as well. I think there's some stuff coming out that should be exciting. Assassin's Creed, I know, is coming up.
Passengers.
Yeah, that's the end of the year movie with Jessica. What's her name? Jennifer Lawrence. I was going to call her Jessica Lawrence. Yeah, and Chris Pratt, which I'm quite excited by. But so we as we wrap up for the end of the year, any final end of year picks for our usual I can't find anything to watch on Netflix segment?
Well, I'm going all the way holiday.
Oh god.
And going with The Princess Bride.
Oh, I love Princess
Bride. Which is a beautiful action adventure, fantastical, you know, lovely film that just captures the holiday for me. Those fantastical sort of fantasy dramas always. And it's funny and it's witty and it's about princes and princesses and monsters and giants and all things lovely. The Princess Bride.
Yeah, I was just talking with somebody very recently about this movie, and it's amazing how it is. It has the fantastic element. There's a little bit of comedy. There's a little bit of emotions. There's the grandfather and child thing. There is, you know, preposterous creatures in it, and it shouldn't all work. It should not stick
witty
together, and it's just, yeah, it almost seems like lightning in a bottle.
Yeah,
of that time.
Yeah,
it's brilliant. Yeah.
Yes, what's yours?
My pick is a movie which came out last year. It actually played at the San Diego Latino Film Festival year, and it was one which was pretty well received across the board. And it's a movie called Father's Chair. It's a Brazilian film. It's streaming live on Netflix right now. The original Portuguese title is A Busca. But Father's Chair stars Wagner Moura. And Wagner Moura is probably one of the most famous Brazilian actors. He is on Narcos. He plays the lead character on Narcos.
I've heard so many good things about that. And TV binge-worthy series.
And I think if you're a lover of cinema, you should just watch this movie just to get acquainted with this actor. I've just liked him in every single movie he's done, and he's completely fearless, and he's played hateful characters, and he's played characters that, you know, Hollywood famous, you know, star would run 100 yards away from. Completely fearless actor. But this is a really kind of a heartfelt movie, and it's about a man who is, and even as I'm saying it, it sounds cliched, but it's beautifully done. It's about a man who is so busy with his life and his career that he hasn't had time to pay attention to his wife and his teenage son until his teenage son goes missing. And his father kind of loses it, almost breaks up with his wife and goes on this quixotic trail to find his son, where he has almost no clues at all in terms of where his son might be. And it kind of becomes a road trip of this man going through, you know, rural Brazil trying to find his son. Mm. And it's his journey, and it's quite beautiful. It has a great ending as well. So Father's Chair, I would really strongly recommend it.
Joe.
Okay. And mine's a very easy pick this week, a very light movie pick. It's not really a movie. It's called And the Oscar Goes To.
Documentary.
It's a documentary. It's about an hour and a half long. And it really revisits the history of the Academy Awards from, you know, basically when they started doing them all the way through to the kind of modern day show and spectacle that they have become. They have lots of clips of movies. It presents a really nice history, I think, of Hollywood, you know, in the kind of the early days of when it started to become a real, you know, force to be reckoned with in the world. And some of the politics and some of the drama that they've had. I mean, you know, the, you know, just the history behind why, PricewaterhouseCoopers, hold the Oscars in secret envelopes is some of the things it touches upon. You know, that little Hollywood tidbit of trivia, you know, because, you know, one year they used to give them in advance to all the press, and then one year one paper inadvertently leaked them, and so, you know, it was a disaster for the show and the ratings and that kind of thing. So you know, they've set up very elaborate methods of protecting the nominations and the winners until, you know, the time that they actually are published. So great, lots of little you know, classic movie clips and actors.
It will almost give you a to-do list if you love movie of it will almost give you like a nice to-do list, right? Of,
yeah,
here are all the movies I've missed in the past.
It's
that were Oscar
very,
winners,
very so. Easy watch, and,
yeah,
and
it's a
very
good choice.
It's very
timely,
enchanting.
Joe.
So yeah, and the Oscar goes too.
Okay,
so we have that one, then we have Father's Chair, and we
the
also
Princess
have
Bride.
The Princess Bride. So lots of stuff, as always, on Netflix. We love you, Netflix. Your subscription fee is always well deserved.
Yes.
So, yeah, those three movies. Let's move into our two reviews of the week. We have A Monster Calls and Hidden Figures. So let's start with A Monster Calls.
So I think I don't really want to say too much about this, other than a boy seeks the help of a tree monster to cope with his single mom's terminal illness. This is directed by J.A. Bayona, and it's written by Patrick Ness, and it's actually based on a novel. So this was a novel, and it stars Sigourney Weaver, Felicity Jones, and Lewis McDougall, amongst others. So we all saw this one. Yazdi, why don't you go first this week?
Yeah, J.A. Bayona is one of my favorite filmmakers, mostly on the strength of The Impossible, which he made a few years ago. He also made, that was the movie about the tsunami, which had
Ewan
McGregor and Naomi Watts. It was my top pick for, gosh, what year was it? It was 2012. Before that, he made a really good, scary, chilling movie called The Orphanage, which was... I think it was in Spanish, but it was subtitled.
He's a Spanish, mainly known for a lot of Spanish movies and work.
Yeah, so here he's making A Monster Calls, and on the face of it, it seemed like an odd thing for him to take up, because the premise is about this boy who is trying to deal with the illness of his mother and kind of befriends this fantastical tree outside his house, which talks to him, and it seems almost in Roald Dahl kind of territory. But, you know, I think just by virtue of the fact, if I had to make a movie about a little boy who talks to a tree, I would run 100 miles away. So I think the level of difficulty here is pretty high. And I never once laughed at the tree or never once did not believe the tree. So it's really a good coming together of concept, of execution, of emotionality. The movie has its heart in the right place.
Joe?
This movie emotionally destroyed me. I think I'm going to have a hard time getting through this review, in part because I think I found the movie very, very powerfully and deeply affecting. You know, it's funny to think of it as a kid's movie, but I think Roald Dahl's actually a great analogy, Yasti, because I think, you know, Roald Dahl did that very wonderful thing of when he wrote for children. He wrote to them by not writing down to them, but by writing, you know, at their level, and accepting that the world can be sometimes a dark, horrible, and scary place. And I think this movie touches on that very much. You know, it's a devastating premise to start with. I mean, you know, a child who's not particularly close with his father, and his mother's now dying. But the movie could be accused of being manipulative, but never comes across in that way. In part because of the way it handles the material and the emotionality of it, and by the end of it, I was a complete blubbering mess. I could not keep it together, and it still affected me in a way that I can take myself right back to that moment just by thinking about the movie, which doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, I don't want to call this movie delightful because it's about a difficult subject matter, but this is very affecting. Joe, I agree with you. This is a really affecting movie that goes deep and is so beautiful in the way that it's constructed and crafted and the way that it gets its message across. This is the movie that Pete's Dragon or the BFG should have been, mm-hmm. because it's enchanting, imaginative, and magical whilst it deals with a really, really difficult topic. And it's just so elevated. I lost it many times during this movie. I mean, having lost parents, this gets it right. I wish I had seen this movie before I'd lost my parents.
Yeah, it's kind of reminiscent a little bit, although it's not the same, to me, of Pan's Labyrinth a little bit. But
not as fantastical, though, in some ways.
But thematically.
Thematically, maybe, because they're both...
No, tonally, rather than thematically, I think.
I think thematically, too, because they're both movies about, unless I've misinterpreted A Monster Calls, they're both movies about individuals dealing with reality, which is so harsh that they have to resort to something that's been made up to kind of deal with it. And they create this parallel universe, you know, to help them kind of get through it. So, what I really liked about the movie is that, you know, when you first see the and I'm not giving anything away, when you first see the monster meet the child, he tells him from the start that I'm going to tell you three stories, and then the fourth one you're going to tell me. And then over the course of the movie, he tells those stories, and those stories are so beautifully animated. So each of the stories the monster tells the kid, they use animation, and it's a different style of animation. And not only is the animation so unusual and so plucky, but I think the stories themselves are so morally ambiguous, and they're
intentionally
not
intentionally so. Yeah,
intentionally so, and there is a greater purpose to it, and I think that's where the strength of the script is. I mean, it's really very thought out script. It you have to almost see it in its totality. But I really like the fact that those stories they're not, like you said, talking down to the children. They're not saying, well, the good guy prevails and the bad guy wins, because life is not like that.
Correct.
And those stories play according to those rules. And I think it's a good thing for a child to see that.
Well, it leads you down the path. The genius of those stories are that they lead you as the audience down a certain path. And then you find yourself thinking, yeah, that's true. And then you're suddenly like, oh my God, I never saw it like that. So there's some Yoda-type lesson in each of those little animations. And then that switch to the style of animation and then back to the CGI and then back to the movie is just, it's seamless. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I think the movie's power is that it taps into something that is not often well done in a movie, which is, you know, one's kind of sense of self and right and wrong, and you know, they do the kind of the truth of the world kind of thing very, very well. But I think you know, it kind of goes more deeply into kind of a personal honesty. Like there's a sense of the world, but then there's also a sense of, but you also now need to accept that for what it is, and you know, continue with your life. And I think that's a very difficult thing to do. And I don't think I can't think of any real movie instances where it's gone quite as deep as this, in a way that is not ultimately condescending, you know?
Right. And I think that when I mentioned Pete's Dragon and BFG, they also deal with difficult subject matter, but the way this handles it, because they also, in a way, say, you know, well, okay, buck up and your life is your life. Deal with it. But I feel like this is so non-precious. And it's so honest and truthful and devastating.
Yeah, it's remarkable.
And I think that it's so restrained and could have so easily have been heavy-handed and overacted, but it almost has that stiff British upper lip about it in some ways.
Well, I think it doesn't... It shows you the path, but it doesn't walk you down the path.
Yeah, and I feel like it manages to cover so many themes like bullying and death of a parent and divorce, but it takes away nothing from the deep-rooted emotionality of how desperate you feel, I think, in that situation.
Yeah, my only gripe about the movie, and I'd realize I'm in the minority in this, I thought that the last 20 minutes of the movie were a little too maudlin. I mean, I think necessarily so. It was taking you down a path, but after a while, I was like, okay, it seemed a little overextended to me. And I know what may seem completely, absolutely, systematically devastating to somebody else kind of just tipped over a little bit to me in terms of the movie trying too hard to really break you down. But again, by that point, it's won so much goodwill that I didn't want to be a Scrooge about it. It deserves it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't see the movie as trying to do that to me. I think, you know, there is definitely an emotional high point or low point, perhaps, that, you know, calls upon us as an audience to react. But I think it's not done to say this is the point at which you will cry. It's just this is the point in the story at which the truth and the central theme that's been present all along really bubbles up to the surface, and that provokes a natural reaction in you as an audience member. But I don't know that they were trying to pull your strings in that way.
Correct.
But I don't know. I mean, that I think it's a very personal reaction to any of this kind of stuff. Can we talk about performances? Because you know, the everyone I thought was absolutely terrific in this movie. I think Sigourney Weaver didn't ever convince me of her Britishness. But okay. Felicity Jones was again, we spoke about her very recently in Rogue One. I loved her to bits in the movie from a couple of years ago with Stephen Hawking, the
Theory of Everything.
And here, buying what she has to sell from a plot perspective is absolutely essential to, I think, the appreciation of this plot.
And she's not in that many scenes.
So, I don't know. Yeah. I felt like this is the best supporting actress nom for me. She's, once again, just shown what a remarkable actress she is. I mean, did anyone else feel that way?
Totally. I was blown away by how well she captures not only the emotionality of having to face death, but also the fact that she's leaving behind a young child. And that, to me, again, could have got very precious, I think, and it stays away from being too precious.
She was good. I mean, I didn't think of her as exceptional. I mean, it's a role that many actors have tackled before. And she was very adept. I didn't think she was exceptional, but you know, I can't fault her at all. I mean, they were all very good. And you know, I'm sure you're leading on to the child actor, right?
No,
you're not. Well, okay. I thought the child actor was just what's his name, McDougal.
Lewis McDougal.
I thought he was very good. He was quite a find. And you know, I think in a way the whole movie rests on his shoulders. And I think he was very good. I mean, I just love how every year brings, you know, last year we had the kid from Room, and then this year we have this little kid, and actually a movie we haven't talked about on our podcast, but we will when it gets released in January, Lion. There's a little kid in Lion, yes, who I thought was just so incredible. So
and even Neil Setty from The Jungle Neil Book Setty earlier this year.
Jungle
yeah.
Book earlier. So I kudos to these directors for working with these child actors and bringing this out from them. So, I mean, and especially in a movie like this where clearly the actor is reacting to blue screen. I mean, right?
Yes.
Or green screen, sorry.
Let's not forget that. Yeah.
So, you know, it's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah. Okay, let's wrap this one up. So, Joe, why don't you go first?
Yeah, just emotionally very, very powerful, truthful, honest, remarkable. It's going to stay with me for a very long time. I mean, this movie had quite an impact on me in the moment, and that hasn't gone away. It's going to take me a while to recover. So, but that's not to say it's not enjoyable, because I think it is very much the kind of movie that I think, yeah, I think everyone needs to see. And I wouldn't be afraid of taking your kids to see it. I think, you know, there will be moments when they're frightened of it, but, you know, follow the PG-13 guidance here and don't be afraid of how they react. 9 out of 10.
Wow. Yes, Steve.
Yeah, I would give it an 8 out of 10. And I think one part of the movie that we haven't talked about is the writing in this movie, which I think is just phenomenal. And yep. I don't know if it comes from the screenplay, which incidentally is by the same person who wrote the novel, Patrick Ness. But some of the dialogue is like, it's like things you need to follow in your own life. I mean, there's some really, really good. And this kind of stuff can come across like the Hallmark Channel, like at the flip of a coin, and it never, ever is like, you know, mawkish or Hallmarky or just, you know, contrived or any of that. So really high marks for the acting, for the writing as well. So 8 out of 10. And then we've already talked about the other parts.
Yeah, the true monster in this movie, I think, is the demons that you as the audience are willing to face. This is devastatingly stunning. Yeah, 8 out of 10. Yeah. I did have to compose myself after just to be able to speak.
Yeah, but you know, I think it's it makes it sound like it's so much sadder and tragic than it actually is. I think in the moment it's very powerfully emotional, but I don't know that it's a sad movie.
Yeah.
I think it depends what you bring to the table. Yeah. I think it's one of those where you really have to face what's inside and how you feel about this topic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my reaction to this movie was actually very similar to what I had for The Impossible, which was a very strong emotional response. I think this director, some directors' works, they just have a gift with getting knee-deep into what might be considered very sentimental topics and just coming out, you know, without being mawkish or without being offensive or trite or any of those things. So this is a really gifted filmmaker, and I can't wait to see what he does next.
Movie number two this week is Hidden Figures. So,
So Hidden Figures is director Theodore Melfi's sophomore effort. His first film was St. Vincent, which came out, I think, last year or the year before with Bill Murray and Naomi Watts and Melissa McCarthy and many others. This time, he tells the story of, it's behind the scenes true story of a group of African-American women who were working as NASA mathematicians, whose largely unsung contributions were critical to NASA's successful initial space missions. So, you know, many movies this year which have been coming out, which have been based on, you know, real life stories, and here's another one. And it has really a very, very good cast. Tara G. P. Henson, who is on TV's Empire, is here. Octavia Spencer, I should say Academy Award winner Octavia Spencer, is there. Janelle Monáe, who we just saw in Moonlight, is here as well. And they actually play the three lead female mathematicians. Kirsten Dunst is here. Kevin Costner is here. Jim Parsons from Big Bang Theory is here. Mahershala Ali, who we also saw in Moonlight, is here as well.
And got the Best Supporting Actor Award.
At the San Diego Film Critics Society, yes. So this looks like a pretty heavy cast, a pretty heavy, you know, cast of characters. I haven't seen this movie yet. The two of you have. What'd you think? Should I rush out and watch it?
This is an important, powerful, and educational story that's well acted and well constructed, although linear in its approach, but it's relevant to today. I think if this had come out a little earlier in the year, we'd be whooping about it. But competition's tough at this moment. I really did enjoy this movie.
Yeah, this is very good. This type of material I often find irritating because I think it tries to almost guilt the audience. You know, when you watch a movie like The Help, it tries to invoke a sense of guilt around the injustice of the situation with, you know, these are three, you know, black ladies who, at the time that this movie was made, there were certain, you know, civil rights type issues that, they had to deal with. You know, one little point, no spoiler, but the movie very cleverly draws the attention to the injustice of the fact that there were separate black and white bathrooms in many places, because there was seen to be this kind of, you know, there was a disdain by the white folks in general to use the same bathroom as a black person. This movie handles that really well, but what I liked about how this movie handles that material is that it draws upon the strength of the characters, the inherent strength of who they are. They're not looking for pity. They're not looking for, and the movie's not trying to get you to pity them. They're successful in spite of their situation. And the story's absolutely remarkable, of the kind of things that they dealt with and how they prevailed and how important they came to be to the United States space program in the 1960s. And it's based on a true story. John Glenn, who just recently passed away as the first American to orbit the planet, you know, is partially featured in this. But his little story piece speaks to just how important these women were to the space program, because he very famously refused to go into space despite computer net technology until one of these mathematicians had verified his numbers, and he insisted on it being one of these ladies. So, very charming movie. I mean,
yeah,
it
charming
avoids
is a good word.
A lot of missteps of this type of material.
But
go on. There's no button here for me. Go on.
I know exactly that. Joe is gushing. I think it perfectly captures a sense of time and attitude, but maybe it doesn't go deep enough because I think it's trying to service too many threads of the same story. And I left not kind of being clear in my mind who the lead was with respect to whose arc we were watching, because it's about three main protagonists who I think were equally leading ladies, the three that you mentioned. And I think, you know, of course they're great. These are great actresses, but I don't think they brought anything mind-blowing to the roles. And so it almost feels a little contrived to get an Oscar nod.
Humbug.
One of those three.
Humbug. It's not, you know, the movie that it reminded me of in terms of its kind of visual look and feel and theme to some extent was The Help. And I just think that this movie very cleverly avoids those type of situations where Rashmi's just, by the way, I have to speak to this. Rashmi's manipulating the cat in this point. And the strength of personality of the cat is prevailing over Rashmi's attempts to dominate.
She's eating plastic while we're recording, so I figured I'd sit on her.
But no, I think
it didn't work.
The actresses do a good job of not trying to elucidate pity from us as an audience.
No, I agree. I agree with that. I think that's a correct observation, Joe. But
it's like these are my situations. But you know what? To hell with it. I'm going to do my job the best that I can in spite of this. And there are one or two moments where they kind of stand up for themselves and say, you know what? You know, I don't like the way that I'm being treated.
No,
I demand a certain level of respect, which that's where the braveness comes through.
Yeah, no, and I like that, but I'm kind of thinking if this was just a regular story about, you know, three women in a man's world versus three African-American women in a man's world, whether we would give it the same attention. Because for me, I think Kirsten Dunst and Kevin Costner were the scene stealers in the scenes that they were in. Because I think their performances were a bit more understated and a bit more subtle. So I kind of think that this one's going to cause a little bit of controversy when it comes to best actress, best supporting actress, given, you know, Oscar So White was the year of 2015. And so I'm kind of coming at it from that angle, in a sense, given what a struggle it's been for us to come to our nominations and our winners. I don't think I would have nominated any of them on my list compared to the other performances we've seen this year.
I mean, does it seem Disney-fied, or is it authentic? Because it tells of a very specific period of time.
A little, I would say.
See, that's where I disagree. I mean, I think...
Yes, you're going to have to watch this one.
It's almost there, but it stays on the right side of that line. And that's the thing that, again, I think for me, I'm very sensitive to that line being crossed. It kind of really irritates me when somebody overly sanitizes or overly emotionalizes a story.
But it's a little precious at times.
No, it's not. It's not. It's precious in the sense of, I think there's some humor in there, but I don't think it's actually going to the place that it could have gone with an inappropriate line of dialogue here and there, with maybe one or two more tears or one or two more downtrodden moments. I mean, you know, for the most part, the movie does a really nice job of, I think, portraying the realities of the time, which is not everyone is racist, although everyone has the potential to be. There's a terrific scene with a policeman, which draws some amazing tension, but the outcome of that scene isn't what you expect it would lead you to. And it's the way that they handle that situation, which I think a lesser movie, a Disney-fied movie, would have been very heavy-handed with that.
Right.
You know, there would be very clear, single viewpoints of particular characters. But instead, you know, expectations are kind of played around with, and the humanity overwhelms, you know, the people don't see them as black women in many cases, because that's not what they are. They're bright people. They're mathematicians. They,
they're contributing to the world they're living in.
Correct.
In a very powerful way. And I think that does come across. I guess the issue I'm having is, it's a little bit manipulative for me at times. So I wouldn't say it's heavy-handed, but sometimes it's not light-handed either.
I mean, I'll have to watch this, because that was my single biggest complaint. Yeah. You guys loved St. Vincent. I thought it was horribly heavy-handed. I couldn't bear this whole thing about making a saint out of,
I liked
you
St.
know,
Vincent, yeah.
Making a saint out of the Bill Murray character, but So I'll have to watch this.
Yeah,
one.
I think this is one for you to watch.
And I will adjudicate.
Yes, yes. And we're making out like we're on different, you know, different parts of the same. We're on different ends of the same spectrum, probably.
Yeah.
So I'll wrap up. So don't hide away from this one, Yazdi. This is a good one for the family. That's the perfect mix of history, story, and entertainment. Easily, a 8 out of 10.
That's good.
Yeah, it's good. It is a good movie. It's a really good movie.
Yep, I'm going to give this a good 8 as well. This is nicely acted. It was very well...
Nicely acted.
It was. I mean, you're right. I don't know that this is necessarily awards material fodder, other than that it's released in awards season, which might give it a disproportionate, look in by the people considering the nominations, but nonetheless, it's a great story. I had no idea that this story existed. It's historically accurate for the most part. I think it does a fine job of portraying these real women, and it does that lovely thing at the end of the movie where, you know, you get to see who some of the people are and kind of what ultimately happened to them. So great stuff. 8 out of 10. I liked it a lot.
It's a good holiday movie as well. It's perfect for this time of year.
Yeah, I just like that the likes of Octavia Spencer, who I've seen do amazing movies even before she was nominated for and won the Oscar for The Help. She can do pretty, you know, challenging material. And she's, you know, she's very versatile. But look at what's happened in the 3-4 years since she's won the Oscar. She gets like little side parts in the Divergent movie, you know. It's
right.
Just so the very fact that, you know, these actors are getting roles of some caliber and some attention, I think, has to be a good thing.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Let us know what you think. Mail at movierollers.com, twitter.com/movierollers, facebook.com/movierollers, instagram.com/movierollers. There's lots of ways to follow us around the internet. So do. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll try and keep you in the loop with what's coming up. So overall, a terrific. This is probably our last podcast of 2016. Into 2017 we go.
But we will be announcing our Muggy Awards.
Yes. I was thinking maybe we should do our Muggies live.
We had a hiatus last year. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that might be a good idea, Rashmi.
As we get to argue about them.
Yes.
But let's see. We'll definitely do some Muggies this year, because I think all of Hollywood was calling us last year. Correct. Demanding where is my mug? I've been snubbed 2 years in a row for a mug, said Tom Hanks. So
Michael was from Michael Fassbender.
That's right. He was our best actor 2 years in a row too.
Correct.
So, all right. So yes, until 2017, it's sayonara. Good night from me.
And me.
And me.
And
as
happy
well.
Holidays.
Merry Christmas.
And happy New Year.
And happy Kwanzaa. Happy
Hanukkah,
yes. Happy Diwali. Why not? Happy sure. Everything. Happy holidays.
Happiness, everybody.
Yes.
All right. Bye.